Welcome to a World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tapman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places,
like a coffee shop in an airport terminal,
or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good.
Welcome to a World of Good podcast. My name is Nate Tapman, and I am joined today by a guest co-host who is not Andrew Gale, obviously, because they're a guest, but I am joined today by my guest co-host and my co-worker who also happens to be my wife.
Hello.
Welcome, Stacy.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, I won't say anything. I will not make any comparisons with my regular co-host, Andrew Gale, and my new guest co-host, Stacy.
Okay, good.
That could get me in a lot of trouble between my wife and my boss.
So, for sure.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. We are still in Madrid, mm-hmm. Spain, where we've been living now for a little over a year. We celebrated our one-year anniversary just about a month and a half ago, has it been now?
Yep.
About a month ago. It was about a month ago.
Yep, it was almost exactly a month ago.
That we've moved to Spain. Mm-hmm. And so getting settled in, life is still, I don't know, it has its challenges. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we will ever feel settled. I don't know if that's a word that missionaries use.
I don't think so. I think we've found that out, figured that out at this point.
I think we had this kind of ideal that at some point we're going to feel settled and
mm-hmm. we were going to know all there is to know.
And yeah. And like, okay, this is going to feel like home and all of that. But I don't know if that ever actually happens.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I do know that we feel more settled than we did a year ago when we arrived.
There you go. So, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we ask our other guests? So we have with us Daniel and Christy Kim who live in Budapest. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing great.
Good, good. And so you guys have been on the field in Europe for how many years now?
This will be 9 years.
Yeah, we moved to the Netherlands in November of 2013. Yep.
Okay.
Wow.
So after 9 years, and you've lived, like you said, you've lived in two different countries over those 9 years, first in Netherlands and now in Hungary. Do you ever use the word settled? Do you ever?
Yeah.
Has there ever?
Is there ever
a point where you feel like you're settled?
I think there was a point I remember several years in where being in Europe, being in the Netherlands felt more like home than Indiana did, you know, so it did shift, but mm-hmm. yeah, when you're always the outsider, it's hard to feel completely settled. Right.
So sure.
I would say there's like levels. And so first, you know, when you first arrive weeks or months in and you get your paperwork approved and then you're legally allowed to stay in the country for the next 2 to 5 years, whatever the government permits you, that's like one level of, okay, all right. Like now we're officially a resident, right?
That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Then it takes a few years, probably at the least, to start to feel more like settled. But then you're also reminded regularly that you're a foreigner, you're a guest, and you don't know all the stuff intuitively that everyone else knows in terms of which days the places might be closed or
whatever. Definitely helps to have an adaptable personality.
Yeah. And
sure. Be used to flexibility.
Sure. Sure. Well, we wanted to have Daniel and Christy on to help us and give a update in all that is happening or has been happening with Ukraine. So as we mentioned earlier, Dan and Christy, you guys live in Budapest and you have been back now for how long? Because you guys were in the U.S. for about 6 months, right? 6-7 months for home assignment?
It's been about 9 months,
almost
right?
9 months.
And was it almost 9 months? Okay.
Yeah. We've been back about a month and a half now, right?
Yeah.
I think we came back around March 9th.
Yeah,
so.
March 10th or so.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. And so by the time you guys landed, we had been in this crisis, this invasion, this war now for a few weeks, maybe 3 weeks or so. Things probably didn't go as you had anticipated prior to the war in Ukraine. You think you know, or you probably had plans of grandiose plans of coming back, spending a few weeks, maybe a month, getting resettled and starting life back up again as missionaries in Budapest and in Europe and the Middle East. But this kind of put a damper on things, didn't it?
Yeah.
It definitely affected the pace at which we wanted to kind of reenter our home and culture and the pattern of life here, the rhythm of life. But it's been good.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, we've had to function a lot quicker than we otherwise would have in terms of we just don't have the luxury of time to get the house cleaned and properly, you know, the way we'd want it to be after being vacant for, you know, almost eight, nine months because we had guests that were going to be coming soon to stay with us. And so
3 days after we landed, we drove north through Slovakia to Krakow, Poland to pick up two young women in their early 20s from the Church of God in Eastern Ukraine. Yeah, or one is from the Church of God in Eastern Ukraine, and they had fled Ukraine to Poland. And then we picked them up and they have been staying with us ever since, which has been a really neat adventure. Yeah. We're learning a little Ukrainian, but not much yet.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So you guys basically, maybe just for our listeners, maybe share a little bit of the context, geographic context of where you're located, neighboring countries, borders that touch Ukraine, because as far as proximity goes, those that are on our team, you guys are closest in proximity to what's happening in Ukraine.
Yeah. So we still live in the Netherlands, which is on the very far western edge of Europe, just east of England, just north of Belgium and France, and just west of Germany. And then we relocated to Budapest, Hungary, which is in Central Europe or Eastern Europe, depending on who defines it. Most Hungarians would say this is Central Europe. But if you're only looking at Europe as being Eastern or Western, then it's kind of a little more towards the east, if you will. We are just east of Austria and Slovenia. And I'm looking at the map to make sure I get all the
There's a lot of bordering countries.
The Czech Republic, Croatia, and just north of Bosnia-Herzegovina, Serbia. And then to our north, of course, is Slovakia. And then to the northeast, we have Ukraine. And then directly to the east is Romania. So
it's not a huge border with Ukraine, but it is a border and has been an access point for refugees coming through. And
Sure. And we know, I just did some information this morning before we started recording. And as of, I believe, within the last few days, we know that there are 11 million displaced Ukrainians currently. Of those 11 million, about 5 million, maybe a little over 5 million have left Ukraine. Over half of those 5 million entered through Poland. Mm-hmm. And then you have several of those, again, bordering countries. Romania, for example, which I think shares the next largest border with Ukraine. They've taken in a little over 750,000 refugees. Russia, a little over 500,000. Hungary, which you guys don't share a big border, but you do share that border, and just under 500,000 have come through the Hungarian border. Also, for our listeners, there are three countries that border Ukraine, Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia, that are part of the Schengen zone. And for those of you that don't know, the Schengen zone allows those citizens or people who pass through those countries to kind of move on through other European countries, or at least those countries part of the Schengen zone, without going through border control. And so for example, and I know you guys have experienced this a little bit in Budapest and Hungary, you have again, 470,000 refugees who have crossed the Hungarian border, but we don't think many of those stayed in Hungary. Many of them probably passed that border and then moved on to other locations. And I know you've experienced that, or have at least expressed that a little bit. Maybe if you could just share early on what you experienced in refugees crossing the border versus now.
Yeah.
Sure.
Every day, every week for sure, sometimes every day, things are changing. So that first week back, I think it was so many people were crossing through the border in Poland, yet mm-hmm. Poland was starting to provide military support to Ukrainians. And so then there was a fear that those refugee corridors were going to be viewed as military corridors and were going to be targeted. So then there was this influx coming through the Hungarian border. That was going to be our second week here. And the train station was flooded with people. And yeah, it really just ramped up. And then that has kind of shifted again, right?
Yeah, a lot of the folks who I would say there are two groups of people largely who came down into Hungary from Ukraine. One group came from a region in southwest Ukraine called Zakarpattia or Transcarpathia. And this is a region that's kind of broken apart from the rest of Ukraine by the Carpathian Mountains and is filled with a lot of ethnic Hungarians, families who 100 years ago, 200 years ago, I don't know the exact history, spoke Hungarian or migrated up there from Hungary. And so a lot of those people maybe did come to Hungary to stay. Mm-hmm. Maybe they did come here to Budapest or onto other villages where their family's ancestry was from and where they still had connections or even relatives. But then the second group, which is probably the majority, just used Hungary as kind of a large corridor to their next destination. And so my first trip up to the border, I drove back a van with carrying five people and two small animals. not cows.
It could have been.
We know a girl who's got a pet cow,
it's
right?
It's true.
But these one was dogs. It was a lap dog and then also a cat. The two ladies that had those animals, I drove them directly to the Budapest airport, which is where they said they needed to get to. And they were looking to fly on to somewhere in the UK where they had a brother, one of them had a brother, and they were hoping to get to him. The other three people I drove, it was like a grandmother figure, a grandfather figure, and like an 11 or 12 year old girl, came to find out they weren't related at all. It was just three random people that were traveling together for a stretch of their journey. And I don't know where they were looking to go, but they were coming down to Hungary.
To the train station.
To the train station in Budapest, which, you know, has trains that go all over. So,
and at that time, that was the big stopping point. So that the train station was flooded. It was a little bit of a tent city. Since then, pretty soon after that, government reorganized and moved all the refugees coming through to one of the soccer stadiums. And so that became a place. So now the train station looks like it did before everything started, but that is kind of the hub. So,
yeah.
Do you have a number on how many refugees are living there in Budapest at the moment?
I don't.
No.
Okay. Okay.
We'll look for that.
no worries.
It's likely in flux so much too. I mean, you know, you have people coming in, but then people leaving, and so to get an accurate number day to day.
Yeah, and that's helpful maybe too for the listeners that coming from Ukraine into the EU, there's a 90-day window where you don't have to have a visa, you don't have to have a residence permit. You can enter Europe for 90 days. Americans can enter Europe for 90 days. But after 90 days, then you need to leave or you need to file for some type of residency too. So we're still in this 90-day window from when the war started. And so a lot of people haven't had to decide or claim a status yet. I mean, a lot have, but a lot haven't had to. So I think that will be interesting too, once we kind of hit that 90-day window to see what the figures look like too.
There are a lot of individuals who formerly had resided in Ukraine that are looking to stay here, at least until the war dies down. And these individuals I'm talking about are missionaries from America or missionaries from several other countries who had been living and serving in Ukraine in various places. And a lot of them have come here to Budapest, where, you know, large international capital city. And there is the presence of a lot of organizations. So some of them, they have colleagues or bosses or home offices here in Hungary that they can kind of come and either stay at or change their duties from serving, you know, in the various capacities that they've done in Ukraine to hosting refugees here, since they have the language abilities to speak Ukrainian and or Russian. And so there have been a lot of them that have come here and are looking at, well, we're going to be based here for the foreseeable future until we can go back to Kyiv or back to, you know, whichever other part of Ukraine they were serving in. Mm.
Going back to the 90-day window, you know, and that's another thing that maybe our listeners I certainly didn't completely understand it until having gone through and walked through this process, but it's kind of a big deal in terms of you have those 90 days to identify, you know, or decide, I guess, if you want to seek refugee status. But the other added step to that or other layer to that is there are all these countries in which you can apply for refugee status, but each of those countries offer something different in terms of whether it might be housing, help getting a job, providing work permits, but also income. Some of these countries will offer stipends, some of them more than others. So that is also a determining kind of factor, if you will, in regards to, you know, refugees not maybe applying for refugee status in the first country they enter into.
And linguistically, what, you know,
yep.
Can they get by with Ukrainian or Russian, or if they're going to have to learn a new language, which one, you know, at some point it's this, like you said, it's a scale of, or a spectrum of how big of a change. One of the perks, I think, to people wanting to stay in Hungary, or at least as close to Ukraine as possible, is that there are some cultural similarities of an Eastern European or Central European type feel, even if just in little things like architecture or whatever, it looks similar to home, or there's some food that's similar. Whereas if you go further away to like Scandinavian countries or something, there's going to be some bigger differences too. So there's a lot of factors that we often wouldn't think about.
Also, just geographic proximity. If they're fleeing Ukraine for safety, but desiring to go back as soon as possible, some folks might not want to go any farther than they need to, just so that when they have the opportunity, they can turn around and go home, or they can turn around and go back to the other family members who are left behind, or whatever the case may be.
Because I mean, we know for sure, again, we mentioned earlier, 5 million, maybe a little over 5 million have left Ukraine. We also know that of those 5 million, at least over 90% of them are women and children. Up until, I believe, April 1st, men between the ages of 18 and 60 could not leave Ukraine. At April 1st date, the government then switched and allowed men between those ages to leave, but they have to have a reason in which to leave. It could be because they are a primary caretaker for a family member, health reasons, I don't know all of those things that would qualify somebody to leave, but we do know a few individuals who have left.
If your spouse is pregnant, perhaps, something like that.
Yep. And that's one of those. And so it's, again, just putting yourselves in the shoes of somebody who, again, never anticipated nor wanted to leave their country. You enter into this foreign country, experiencing all of this trauma, kind of forced to make this decision within 3 months of completely resettling your life, maybe yourself, maybe with kids, probably without your husband, and trying to decide which country do I live in, with this, again, kind of hope in the back of your mind that maybe within a few weeks, maybe within a month, I can go back to my home country.
Exactly.
Have you heard any stories, or do you know of anybody who is wrestling through some of those that kind of just can share with our listeners to give them some insight into what that is like for somebody?
We
know several young people that are in their 20s that have left, and I think it feels, you know, on a small scale of like, oh, where am I going to go to college? This is a huge choice of my life. I mean, something like that, except with all this added burden of sometimes survivor's guilt of I got out of the country, but my family's back. You know, people that, you know, they haven't been able to contact certain members of their family, and that has occupied a huge part of their mental and emotional capacity. They're worried about these family members, but then now they're also supposed to start planning for, you know, the next 6 months, up to 3 years of their life. You know, it's this daunting kind of tension I don't know, a split really.
I can't, to be honest, I can't imagine if I had to be in their shoes, what my life would be like, and how I would wrestle with these questions and wrestle with these you know, options or opportunities or lack thereof of what's best. You know, I sometimes overanalyze situations, and I'm sure my wife's smiling here. I try to make the absolute best possible decision. And sometimes that can be, what's the word? That can be like overwhelming and like paralyzing, that's the word, paralysis of just trying to figure out, all right, if I'm going to eat this sandwich, which one is the best one? That's a silly thing, but think about like a massive thing of, okay, if I'm going to move temporarily, perhaps, or for several years, or perhaps for the rest of my life, to a new country with a new language, a new history, a new culture, which one is the best one to go to? Is it the one where I know one person who I went to summer camp with 2 years ago or whatever? Or is it the one where I have some family members? Or is it the one where I've heard good things, but, you know, like, it's just unbelievably overwhelming. It's
another layer is, I know you guys, Stacey, have talked with the German Church of God too. We were talking with a couple pastors yesterday about the different waves and the different degrees of all these things we've just been talking about. So some people that, you know, maybe got out in the first few days or weeks of the war, you know, there was that I'm out, but my family or friends aren't. And then people now who have literally experienced a lot of incredibly intense things, direct war in their towns, have been able to get out. And the level of trauma that they've experienced is magnified, of course. And so, and those 90 days don't start until you have crossed the border. So, you know, their 90 days just started. But trying to deal with all of, to heal and make these decisions, I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah, there are so many unknowns. I mean, even at this point, it's like, kind of living life, you know, wanting to make wise decisions. And like you said, Dan, I think the term is analysis paralysis, but wanting to make good decisions for, you know, yourself and your family, but not knowing, you know, what the future holds in any way, shape or form. You know, like Nathan mentioned, you know, are we going back? Are we, you know, do we need to, you know, set up a home in a completely different country with a different culture, a different language? You know, when do you start, you know, learning the language? When do you start acquainting yourself with your, you know, potentially your new home? It's got to be so difficult.
Well, and making those decisions for yourself is one thing, but then when you have children who you're making those decisions on behalf of as well, you're also thinking through education and their own future, what would be best for their own future. So
you mentioned that there are people from, you know, several different organizations, you know, other missionaries who have, they were serving in Ukraine, have come out of Ukraine and, you know, are either settled in Hungary or other outlying countries. Wondering what kind of collaboration that has brought to this effort amongst, you know, other nonprofits. What are you seeing? And we know a little bit about what you're seeing because we've spoken about it, but maybe just for the listeners, you know, talk a little bit about what you've seen as far as collaboration goes.
Well, one of the benefits of being here in Budapest is that Sophie's able to attend this international Christian school. And that has really helped us meet and connect with a lot of people. And that's how we've been able to connect with some of these organizations too, that we've been able to tap into that. But Campus Crusade is an organization that has, I think Ukraine is a hub for them, and they have something like 140 missionaries that are Ukrainian serving in Ukraine. And most of them have evacuated and a lot are here in Budapest.
Yep.
You were able to connect through One Mission Society.
Yeah, we've got good friends who they are kind of like the regional coordinators based here in Budapest for OMS, One Mission Society. And they have a team of missionaries who reside here in Budapest and oversee ministry in Hungary. They also have a team who serves in Ukraine. Obviously, they had to evacuate them. Mm-hmm. And so before the war began, they made all of them get on a train or a bus or a plane, or I don't know what form it was, and leave. And most of them came here because their bosses were here and they said, hey, we've got a temporary place for you at least. Mm-hmm. Some of them, I think, went to different other countries where they had family or whatever. But they came here and then they've been very instrumental in helping to spearhead a lot of the relief ministry that I've gotten to be a part of that OMS has launched. And a lot of that has been physically driving supplies, mostly food and diapers, and some medicine and other things into Ukraine to distribute to congregations. There were a group of reformed churches, but then those congregations, there's 108 of them that are part of that network, and they're literally spaced all throughout the country of Ukraine. And so we've taken things up into kind of their central hub just across the border from Hungary. Not far, Mom, if you're listening. Then from that office, they've been put on various buses or cargo vans and literally transported all across the country, to Kyiv, to Kharkiv, to Mariupol, even to Bucha. Right after all that hit the news a week or two ago now, that very next day, I brought a load up, literally a ton of food. And the next morning, that was all going to be picked up and taken up there. So, yeah.
It's been amazing to see how within, you know, there's the military effort in Ukraine, of course, and different governmental things, but we've heard mostly about different churches and within the Church of God, of course, different pastors that are trying to connect and get people from one place to another, or host people as they're on their way through to safety, or, I mean, all these different things, but also outside of the Church of God and how people are working together. And these people that have been serving in Ukraine that know sometimes Ukrainian and Russian, or at least one of those. You know, every time Dan and the OMS group goes across the border, there's driver, but there's also someone translating. And so they've been instrumental in helping kind of be the bridge people to allow a lot of this ecumenical work to happen. So it's been really neat.
Yeah, I think those stories are so encouraging to see how, you know, groups that might not have worked together, you know, in other circumstances have really come together to, you know, make a big impact in this. Obviously, you know, that's a bright spot that has come out of this incredibly, you know, difficult, tragic situation.
Right.
And let me add real quick, what I've observed is just the mentality that we should all have, especially as Christians, that it's about we, not me. So we have taken some supplies from our Hungarian Church of God congregations up into Ukraine to be given to some of our Ukrainian Church of God folks who are displaced from where they normally live, but still within the country of Ukraine. And when I drove the van up with those supplies, the rendezvous point, I set it up with the Reformed Church that I was just mentioning, because they have great property. And I talked to them and said, is it possible for me to meet some of our people here? And they said, please, yes, that's great. And so I was there, and we transferred from one van to the other all the goods from the Hungarian Church of God to the Ukrainian Church of God. And then the young Ukrainian mother who was there, that has been mentioned in some of the global strategy articles of recent time, she was there to receive these goods. One of the other ladies from the Reformed Church said, well, do you need any of these? And she like lifted up some cans of beans or something. And she said, well, I mean, yeah, I guess. And she said, the Reformed lady said, well, here, we've got a lot of this. Here, you take these on to your people. Mm. And literally, I mean, I'm going to make up a number here because that's what I do. I'm not a math guy. She probably gave her 200 cans of beans. I mean, it was unbelievable. And there were things that like they could have used and hoarded. But they said, we can share this. You know, we don't need this. Mm. You know, we've got other things, and these people have a need too. So
you definitely, you know, you hear stories of bad things, people taking advantage of people. But thankfully, there's also the stories of people being generous when they don't have to be. And that's been really neat.
Yep.
Mm. That's awesome.
As you mentioned, the young Ukrainian mother, through our Global Strategy Facebook page, through the Three Worlds Facebook page, we've been giving a lot of updates on the Church of God in Ukraine, the pastors, the leaders, the congregational members, just the churches throughout Ukraine, what they've been doing. And so kind of with that, I'll just kind of give an update. If you haven't been seeing those, there's a lot been going on, and we have been grateful to collaborate with the German Church of God. We are able to send funds to them, who then they are able to pass those funds on to our main contact in Ukraine, a pastor in Ukraine, who's actually now in Germany. I'll share a little bit more about that here in a few minutes, but he is then able to distribute those funds to other pastors and Church of God congregations around Ukraine. So for example, his church in central Ukraine, they feed up to 130 to 150 people daily. They currently have 20 refugees who are living in their church. They can sleep up to 40 people each night. They've provided food for over 1,500 refugees so far. They have taken in 10 tons of humanitarian aid and have distributed those either through their church or into their community. They've aided 67 people in evacuating Ukraine. Again, this has been since the war, the invasion has started. Our pastor in northwestern part of Ukraine, he has literally put himself in danger, put his life in danger in the work that he has been doing. From his location in northwest Ukraine, he will take people to the border in Poland, drop them off there, and then he will pick up provisions, typically pick up provisions. And so far, he's picked up 120 tons of provisions that he then will drive across the country into the eastern part of Ukraine and distribute to church members there, congregational members, friends, other connections. I know that he's been shot at. I know that his van has been broken down, but he has literally, I just heard from him this morning that he just returned home from a recent trip in which, again, the locations that he's going to is, many of them are already occupied by the Russian army. And so it's unbelievable the extreme in which these pastors, these leaders are going and giving of themselves when no doubt they are already experiencing this trauma personally,
right,
but yet they're going above and beyond. There's another pastor in southeast part of Ukraine. We do know that the church has been occupied by the army. His keys have been taken away, but yet he still continues to work out of his house. He receives funds, purchases provisions, able to feed people during that time. His wife has been able to get out. We know that as well. Going back to the pastor, our main contact in Ukraine, central Ukraine, his wife is 3 months pregnant, maybe 4 months pregnant at this point, and they stayed as long as they could. His parents are in failing health as well, and they just finally made the decision about a week and a half ago that they needed to leave. And so they are now in Germany with one of our Church of God congregations there. And, you know, the German Church of God has really stepped up as a whole through this entire process. We've learned that through three or four different locations, they've taken in 200 refugees just with the Church of God at this point, as well as with others that they've taken in. And it's just been amazing to see and hear and experience the work that's been happening there. The Hungarian Church of God, again, who Daniel and Christy work with, they have been gathering provisions. They've been distributing those. Many of those have gone to the young Ukrainian mother that we referenced, to her and her family. They're kind of on the southern central part of Ukraine, bordering Romania. Maybe just share a little bit about what the work that they're currently doing, have been doing, kind of currently doing. I know it's kind of in flux, and they've recently have just taken in more refugees from eastern Ukraine as well.
Yeah. So they are still in Ukraine, but displaced from where they normally have lived. And they are in a community of people, about 150 people, I think, that they're caring for, all of whom, you know, are not from where they're living now. And they've been kind of coordinating to not only to get things to them, but also to get things prepared for them, whether that's meals or whether that's other things and housing, just logistical things of that nature.
Yeah, it was, they, I think family was down in, they relocated to that area because there were family in that area.
That's right.
And that's right. They had, I think, 15 people living in one house at one point. And so they were trying to locate options of where they and other refugees could stay, and were even renovating different apartments and trying to, and, you know, they were providing a really neat service to that area. So we're still praying for them to be able to have that, houses will become available and they can help provide a place for people to stay. Mm. And like you, I think, touched on at the beginning, some people are not leaving because they're the men in their lives aren't allowed to leave.
Yep.
And so that's a huge decision of, you know, do I leave without my husband or my father or my brother, or do we stay? And so a lot of the families that have stayed, it's because they want to be there with their family, keep their family unit together. So, and that's the case for, for this family for sure.
And the husband at this point has not been drafted into the military. So one of the things, again, that we're kind of finding out through this process, he, for example, he has an exemption of, currently has an exemption status of going into the military because he is able to provide humanitarian aid and have proof of humanitarian aid. I think they have to have a pastor or somebody who can sign off and verify that rather than going into the military, instead they're doing humanitarian aid. And so far the Ukrainian government allows him to do that, I think up to 20 days at a time before he has to go back in and reapply and, and all of that stuff.
And I think that's, as we've heard from other organizations here in Budapest, with their Ukrainian contacts, there's the fear of at some point, will it escalate to the fact that everyone, every man has to has to be drafted into actual conflict. And I'm just thinking about us and, you know, neither Dan nor I have experience in in direct combat, and you worry about people that are freshly thrown into something like that too, right? And these pastors. So we're just praying that they will be able to keep that exemption status, and we're mostly praying, of course, like for an end to the conflict for everybody, but
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys for just sharing a little bit about your world and what's been happening. One of the last questions we always ask is what good is God doing in your world today? And I often share this with the Ukrainian pastors, you know, thank you for being a light in these dark days. And again, you guys aren't necessarily experiencing exactly what they're experiencing in Ukraine, but you are close to the conflict there. You're driving across the border, Dan, and doing other things. And so again, it's great that to be able to see and experience kind of through you guys the light that you're able to provide. But so maybe specifically, what is something good that God is doing in your world?
Yeah,
that's a great question. I think you have an answer and I have an answer, right?
Yeah, I'll tell mine first.
Yeah.
So we were, the two girls that are staying with us, we were at home the other day and I heard a scream, which wasn't good. As we mentioned earlier, you know, not knowing where family is and all that, I was fearing the worst, that bad news had come.
It wasn't the scream of, oh, there's a big spider. It was a deep,
emotional scream. And so with some fear and trepidation, I went into the room and asked what had happened. And it, thank God, was a scream of joy that they had heard from a family member that they hadn't been able to be in contact with and that they were okay. And just such relief that someone had eyes on this person and that they were, at least for that moment, they were still alive and they were okay. And because they were in Mariupol, one of the cities that has been in the news and heavily besieged. Wow. So we were just so grateful for a bit of good news in one of these long, tense periods of worrying about a certain family member. So very, very grateful for God's protection for her.
My story is a little different. It's also good, of course, but it's how God is working through his church. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mentioned one of my now several trips into Ukraine. I brought things from that had been purchased and collected by our Hungarian Church of God to some of our Ukrainian Church of God friends, including the young Ukrainian mother. This particular day, the van that I drove across, I was loaded down with some clothes, tons of food. I mean, literally a ton of food. Some diapers, a box of children's toys that had been collected by our church folk, and then three small electric space heaters. And so the young Ukrainian mother had communicated with some of our Hungarian church ladies some of the specific needs they had. And so she said, you know, we need medicine. And so she'd given a list of, like, we need cough medicine, or I don't know what was on it. And so our Hungarian folks had purchased or collected items corresponding with the express needs that were on this list. So I drove across and I'm unloading the van of all the goods and getting ready to reload it into the van that they had driven across to take back to where they're staying. And a young Ukrainian mother saw these three boxes on the ground, which were the space heaters. And she said to me, "Are those what I think they are?" And I kind of said, "I don't know what you think they are." And she said, "Are they what the box says?" And I said, yeah, it's three space heaters. And she said, wow, unbelievable. I didn't say that we need these, but we have three families who have been staying in rooms with no heat. And they've been very cold tonight. This is amazing. And I later found out the young lady in Hungary who purchased those, she just saw them and something told her, this is a good thing. They might be able to use those.
Wow.
And so God spoke to her, whether she realized it or not, and said, hey, go ahead and buy these in addition to all the food and medicine.
And it was, you know, the spring is starting here. I think a little bit warm. I know it just snowed in my parents' house in Indiana, but it's been a bit warmer here. So it was kind of like the end of the season and they really don't have space heaters out anymore. Right, and she happened to see them. And so it really was a neat story of how God knew that was a need and orchestrated it all. And it all happened.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. That is awesome. That gives me chills.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say that. I've got goosebumps.
Wow. Well, again, thank you guys so much for spending this time and just sharing great insight into what you're doing, into maybe being able to communicate on behalf of some of the Ukrainians and what they've experienced and what they continue to experience through this again, just this dark time in that part of the world. And so, and thank you to my co-host, Stacy, for being a part of this.
Thanks for having me.
If maybe this becomes a new thing, I don't know. I don't know where Andrew's job goes from here. We'll have to
I don't know that I don't know that I can replace Andrew.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll leave that up to you. So again, thank you to our listeners. Thank you to those of you who have given. We will include a link in the show notes if you would like to continue to give or like to give for the first time to what is happening in Ukraine. We have a link that you can click on. And once you click on that link, just write Ukraine in the comments, and that will make sure that 100% of what you donate will go to the efforts in Ukraine.
No administrative fee is taken off.
None taken out. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.